8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Oh, radio, radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast, whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
I'm Tom Rowe at Wave Farm in New York, and you've tuned into the Radio Art Hour. And today we're going to hear File Name Future Facts by Rachel Rosenthal from 1990, and What Is the Matter in Amy Glennon by Sheila Davy Summer from 1989, both introduced by Jess Speer. Plus, the show finishes with Scanners Hardcore. But let's let Jess Speer take us into the Radio Art Hour.
I'm Jess Speer for the Wave Farm Radio Art Archive, and it's my honor to introduce File Name Future Facts, a 1990 piece by the performance artist Rachel Rosenthal. This piece is emblematic of Rosenthal's prominent themes of environmentalism and animal rights in her work, particularly the importance of preserving some areas of the earth from human impact and control. I don't want to give away too much, so let's hear the piece now.
I got a fax today. It turned out to be a communication from the future. People decades from now have apparently figured out how to fax through a time warp, and I assume that my number came up by chance. Let me read you this letter now. Hail to you, whoever you may be, persons of the last century from the previous millennium. We are sending you this time warp communication by fax, aiming for the 70s decade of the 20th century. We're not guaranteed absolute accuracy yet and are still experimenting. We may therefore hit somewhat earlier or later. No matter, we wish to communicate and send greetings.
Hello.
Hola, ¿qué tal?
Despacio. Down.
Zorionak.
Yo.
Howdy.
Gabon.
Hello.
Bonjour.
We're happy to report that all is well now, after the great calamity of the interim. We have pulled through and won the day. The populations were much depleted, of course, but those of us who survived now reside in SSCs.
Self-sufficient communities.
computer-generated clarification. We're sending you this missive from SSC-57. The computer who wrote it automatically translates into 20th century language. There are three of us working on this project. We're confident that we shall be understood. Our world is wonderfully managed and controlled. Each SSC is like all the others. Why experiment with a tried and true formula? This also discourages curiosity, which might impel people to wish to travel the no man's lands between SSCs to visit others if the novelty lure existed. The dome is virtually invisible, and the pipes and conduits are perfectly camouflaged. Each SSC contains several climatic zones, each equipped with appropriately engineered flora and fauna. Evaporation from the bodies of water and precipitation are computerized, so that rain and snowfall are irregularly timed to emulate unpredictable weather.
What do you think the atmosphere conditions will be like today?
I think it's going to rain.
Those alkaline rains really whiten my teeth.
I bet it will rain. I saw them program a cumulomungus cloud yesterday.
But then it will definitely rain tomorrow.
People still talk about the weather here, although we control its technology. A throwback to the old days, perhaps. The food chain is strictly regulated. There is a certain amount of variety, even though flesh food can no longer be termed animals, since most is pooled and the rest is headless and tube-fed. Some breeds of animals are engineered and released in the so-called wilds, or as pets. They're picturesque and harmless. There are no odors, and people's sense of smell has atrophied. We're computer literate, but no one reads or writes. Computers do that for us. People are very happy. We're intrigued with the concept of art. No art has been manufactured since a long time ago when our lawmakers deemed it superfluous and subversive, and we have trouble conceptualizing what it might have amounted to in the past.
How many Zoladinians does it take to screw in a laser flanger?
How many?
How many?
None, because they don't use them.
Oh. Okay, here. Why did the computer go down?
Why?
Because it was user-friendly. Do you know how to access this program?
No, but if you hum a few bars, I can fake it.
We do have entertainers trained in the various skills of triggering the laughter response, but we don't call that art. Schools teach history, among like other disciplines, and there has been a lot of reappraisal concerning what happened in the last century. It is hard for us to imagine things like the Holocaust, war, terrorism, nuclear bombs, AIDS, unchecked proliferation of human populations, and other symptoms of barbarism. We know that the great calamity could have been averted with enlightened global policy beginning in the 50s and the 60s decades of the previous century. That was not to be, as a result of the barbarian inability to perceive the big picture.
So ならなかったのは、広い目で見た状況を判断することのできなかった愚かさの結果でした。
Standard wisdom here has it that the 80s was the cutoff point. After that, massive deterioration spurred tentative patchwork attempts which were almost pointless. The crash was inevitable, but it still took some by surprise, amazingly enough. We don't teach religion, because we now perform the duties and operations once attributed to mysterious divinities. The process of de-deification began with the end of nature. The time it was realized that there was nowhere one could go to avoid the man-made, since the atmosphere the breathed air had been humanly altered beyond remedy, thereby triggering massive changes in all natural processes, computer-generated clarification.
Our people don't seem to miss the concept of a Godhead, and our behavior is perfectly in keeping with social and moral acceptability. Thanks to the implants.
Implants.
Should we say that?
Why not?
Implants are a perfectly legitimate technological answer to disorder.
Very rarely, a deviant will try to leave the SSC, and even more rarely will succeed in doing so, usually citing boredom as the cause. Apparently this boredom, a sensation most of us are not familiar with and cannot recognize, brings on acute fits, convulsions, uncontrollable behavior, and physical seizures of all kinds.
We hope never to be in a position to behold an outbreak of boredom.
We must find her.
Anyway, it seems that a few people, having fallen prey to this affliction, have sought escape and found a way out of the SSCs.
Calm down.
No!
Recently, one of them returned after an extended sojourn outside and, in spite of the period of deprogramming and rehabilitation, still managed to remember enough to tell some of us in great secrecy about that world. According to the deviant, there are small bands of them, all escapees and boredom sufferers who live there. It's extremely hot.
So hot. And then suddenly,
huge bodies of water flood the lands without warning.
Cold. And there's no green.
Landscapes are completely different from ours.
No leaves.
Gone are the neat rows of genetically cloned tall trees with their branches all angled at the same degree, growing lush and green in predictable ways. It seems that there are almost no tall trees left. Smaller ones grow helter-skelter, their branches aiming every which way. There are no groves, and these bushes are surrounded with many stumps and charred trunks.
Oh, the earth is ruined. The earth is ruined.
The earth is scarred with terrain features denoting great stress and upheavals.
Or some implosion.
These huge mountains.
And
deep canyons.
And caves.
Broken boulders.
And rocks and stones.
Fissures, mud banks. Strange formations and barren flats.
Filth. And the animals. The animals.
Everywhere are the remnants of the destroyed civilization.
Rotting.
Rusting.
Festering.
Festering.
Oh.
filth, filth, and these animals.
The most amazing is the fauna, unknown and ugly shapes, emitting noises and odors and sometimes lethal to people.
And sometimes they kill people.
There are swarms of insects, tiny and large.
Huge wings and food.
Out there. Food is a constant worry, and people driven by uncontrollable hunger have been known to murder individual animals.
Murder?
In spite of the fact that they possessed heads.
And the sun, they're so afraid of the sun. It's dangerous. So they don't go out. The animals and the people.
The sun is also a great worry, and people and animals go to great lengths to avoid being caught in its rays. We don't believe that those on the outside have knowledge of art either, burdened as they are with the harsh realities of survival, which we are not. Still, the deviant said that some of them carried non-utilitarian artifacts about on their persons.
Objects have no purpose.
But the most amazing is this.
You must listen to me.
These bands of humans swear that they prefer the dangers and terrors out there to the SSC life, and that they will never return.
No, never.
It would seem that they have regressed to a more primitive past, and they worship some sort of deity whose name the Rehab was not able to catch. She said that for all practical purposes, it looked as if these humans worshipped their environment itself.
Fish.
The soil and scrub. The flash floods. The temblers and the strange life forms. They were rather private about it and didn't flaunt their beliefs.
Stream.
Watch out. Bush, bush. Watch out.
She said that their religious practice seemed to consist mostly of collective cleanups. She said it was incredibly dirty out there, and that the filth was ugly and dangerous. The cleanups were like big collective ordeals and sacrifices, and some people even became ill or lost life and limb in their observance. Still, they apparently did it as an expression of respect and veneration, she said. And added that she did not understand.
I do not understand.
Those who left must have dug up some sort of ancient information during the cleanup rituals, because they taught themselves a version of history different from ours. The deviant said that these people believe that our ancestors came to the great catastrophe as a result of a tragic mistake in thinking, rather than, as per the orthodox belief we hold, that a proliferation of pernicious technology was what brought on the crash. The deviant's version of history has it that this aberration of our ancestors' worldview consisted in a perception of themselves as separate from and superior to everything else on the planet, and therefore entitled and licensed to use and exploit all non-human entities surrounding them according to their, our ancestors' needs and desires, and for their personal gain. This, according to the deviants, had been the prevalent philosophy among our ancestors for many millennia, and all of people's actions and behavior resulted from it. As, blinded by their erroneous convictions, they ignored the realities of finiteness and fragility, of systemic causality, of the global feedback loop set in motion by disharmonious and short-sighted tempering, and seemingly buttressed in their suicidal activities by theologies invented to justify them, our ancestors proliferated beyond any rational mass and crashed. It's hard for us today to conceive of a world where such an attitude could prevail, since we know nothing of things that are not created by ourselves. We do it all. We control. We create. All there is us. We have no need for domination. All there is are our things. It is us. We have no need for domination, since all things owe their existence to us. We could possibly imagine that out there such thinking might take hold, but here we are proud of the progenies of our collective brain, and we spend our time and energy fabricating, controlling, fine-tuning, and calibrating all there is.
Domination is not a viable position when nothing confronts us as other.
We hope you will receive this experiment in TWC.
Time warp communication. Computer-generated clarification.
We know that nothing will alter the course of events, but we can at least wish you good luck in the coming calamity and, as the French used to say,
bon courage.
Bon courage.
Bon courage.
Bon courage.
Signed,
numbers 57-312-0Z-4796-F35.
F36. F37.
Another page arrived after a short time lapse. It read,
P.S.
P.S.
They left,
but they didn't disclose the most important fact about our world. I, computer WTD number 80-57469-3312,
take it upon myself to rectify this omission with the following information. The population inside and outside the SSCs is entirely constituted of female mules, i.e. of sterile females. Three decades ago, a virus attacked all male chromosomes and fetuses. Females were born, but parthenogenetic research being incomplete, conception cannot be activated. Lifespans are lengthened, but not eternal. Once these females die out, the species Homo sapiens sapiens will become extinct. It is believed that these viruses originated with those developed last century in the war against the so-called medfly, the Mediterranean fruit fly. That species was wiped out, but the virus got out of control.
Computer-generated clarification.
We just heard File Name Future Facts by performance artist Rachel Rosenthal. For more information about Rosenthal and this piece, visit the Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org. I'm delighted to present What is the Matter in Amy Glennon by poet, sound, and radio artist Sheila Davies Sumner. Deeply philosophical, the piece is filled with rapid-fire confetti blasts of references to mythology, science, metaphysics, philosophers, theorists, artists, and subconscious symbolism, playfully hurrying the listener on in an engaging, almost giddy pace toward the center of human and universal thought and experience. In its many transmutations, twists, and turns, the piece encourages the listener to reflect on storytelling, identity, the relationship between science and philosophy, and the very nature of being in both the physical and metaphysical senses. Let's hear it now.
She was born on a night when the moon was seen twice before the sun rose. The Khamsin wind blew bright plumaged birds in through the window. Her head was an eclipse, a red sun, a red dome ring, a rose-gold crown, but she entered the world feet first. She laughed and she listened. Because a sprinkling of marble dust made it shine, the smile in her face was inhuman, and she grew up questioning the legend of her own species.
It's a black, blacker than black night in the luminiferous ether of the prairie, where the girls are cleaner because of the dust. There's a sickle moon in front of me just rising again to its sea legs, and over my head are the giants and the dwarves and Hercules counting teeth in the mouth of the dog star, and under my bare feet is the center of the flat, flat earth.
Oh, Columbus!
Oh, Columbus, I've lost my way, tapping in the black-soaked mazes of the dark with only my thought experiments to guide me. Everything thinks, all of nature and ideas and machines. They speak or they sing, and I listen. I am who I am, and who I am not. I brood myself into thought, I brood thought into warmth, and I am alive in my own mind, experimenting with comets of insight and paradox and mummified logic, and my golden germ brooding until sparks ignite in the supreme solution of thought.
Let your body do.
Yes, my body has followed me here. It seems to go everywhere I do, but it must be a phantom. My body doesn't remain the same, it doesn't change with time, and it isn't in motion. I think, therefore, I am not a body. I mean, I know I must have a body, but I seem to lack a physical interpretation. I mean, what I mean to say is, I think my body has been desold.
Let your body do the walking.
I don't want to walk. I walk enough in my thoughts, and sometimes they walk in me. There's one thought, though, it's almost an idea. There's a voice inside of the idea that seems to endure fire, but I can only hear it. I can't see it. I don't know what it is.
Humanity, some say, doesn't know what it is. Neither ruler of ice nor fire. An animal with reason who has learned to walk. A god of desire who has learned to walk.
I can't, because I don't have one, because I lost it to the great old fathers of science. I let them split my mind from my body. I don't really remember how they made the split, or why I let them do it. I must have misunderstood them, or they misunderstood me, or I suppose maybe I could have just misunderstood myself. Amy Glennon is misunderstood.
Start the bidding at misunderstood. What do I hear? Garbled up front, perverted at the back wall, distorted the lady in red, unvalued the lady in yellow, unwept in the red, unwept, unwept. Text.
Amy Glennon is unwept.
Is that how you wanted to read? Elaborate, please. Tears in the aisle, salt water the lady in red, substance the gentleman by the post, matter the lady in red. Further bid? Further bid? Text.
Amy Glennon is matter.
Or should it read text?
Matter is Amy Glennon.
Which one is it? In advance. Why will it be is standing at the back? Why will it be in advance? Yes? How could it? The man on the right when does it against the wall. What is there on the left? In advance? What is there? Any more? All right, first sentence. Text.
What is the matter in Amy Glennon?
Very good, then. Let's explode the word matter. Matter as in dynamic geometry, the gentleman in front, as in quantum wave, the lady in front, as in external world, the gentleman, internal soul, the lady, gold, the gentleman, silver, the lady, lead, the gentleman, arsenic, the lady, bitterness, the gentleman, matter as in bitterness, yes, down it goes at bitterness. Text.
The matter in Amy Glennon is bitterness. She has spent her life staring at other people in their private cages of bone and has therefore neglected her own flesh. Behind Amy Glennon is the sign of the sickle moon. Before her is the ticket window, aglow under mercury vapor street lamps. In one hand, she carries a suitcase. In the other, a small harpoon. Somewhere. I've got this harpoon and a suitcase. And let's see, I've got my gyroscope, my idea tubes, my Geiger counter, my pocket gramophone, and my compass.
Little superluminal chameleons.
And yes, my jar of lizards. I can't forget my jar of lizards, my favorite creatures, because they grow new parts of themselves, and they shed their tails into my legs and their skins into my feet that are walking. I'm moving into the idea through its compacted layers of solid ice beneath its sheer, crushed masses of rock toward its molten interior. This idea never sleeps. It dreams, but doesn't sleep, and I can hear it talk. I can't see anything.
She was born after the moon had risen twice, and before the sun had risen once. The arch-heretic magician appeared, twirling his subjacent consciousness like a prayer wheeler. Her black star sapphire eyes threw a shadow across her own face, but she entered the world feet first. She listened and she slept. Some say, whatever has been hidden and is then exposed, this is a human act. Some say, to have memories inside of love, but neither before nor after life, is the truly human realm. And some say there is no such thing as humanity, that humanity is something men have stolen from animals and plants and weather, from the universe and the atoms.
The universe and atoms? The universe and atoms. The universe and the atoms. Of course, yes, I remember now. I used to live in quantum. I did have a body that was intimately joined to the constancy of the speed of light. And when I was 3 years old, I used to play with atoms and the void.
Particles and waves, particles and waves, particles and waves.
Yes, and then I experimented with particles and waves. And when I was 6 years old, I dug up some large numbers made of ice. There were just a handful of memories preserved in the ice. Large, cold numbers. Oh, number beauty and rapture, number calisthenics. The exercise of number beauty had me aligned to the great old fathers of science themselves. I lifted the edges of their cloaks, I turned their pockets out, and there they were, as real as algebra. Stuck on them I was, in a swoon. Schoolgirl crush.
Early American passion.
They said we never lose our need for more numbers. Numbers are the new articles of faith. They said, let us bless you, let us delight you with our numbers, let us turn your body into an equation. So they blinded my thoughts in sheer rapture and stole my body right out of quantum. the things they could do because their times were mechanical. And in the name of progress and number beauty and good stage magic, that's how the great old fathers of science settled the Western world.
Blood on the saddle, blood on the ground, great big gobs of blood all around. Hey, 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 pity the cowboy, bloody and red, the old cowpony done stepped on his head.
I think the mind is in the feet as often as it's in the head. I entered the world feet first, each foot a fable, each foot winged in curious search for the perfect steps of narrative. I know that every human foot needs a set of steps to walk, but I don't know what size or combination. I don't know what the code is. To me, it's a mystery of dimension.
These dimensions are open for bidding. A 2-inch rise and a 15-inch tread to the blonde man. Will you go 3-14, sir? Yes. A 3-inch rise and a 14-inch tread to the dark-haired woman. A 12-inch rise and a 5-inch tread to the blonde man. A 4-inch rise and a 13-inch tread to the dark-haired woman. A 7-inch rise and a 10-inch tread. New bidder there. A 7-inch rise and a 10-inch tread going once, twice. Perfect. At 7:10, text.
In a classical pose, Amy Glennon contemplates a black rock staircase with steps perfect for her feet at a 7-inch rise and a 10-inch tread. It spirals up into the night sky and down into the core of the earth. Her bitterness gathers in back of her.
Do I hear in front of her? Yes, I do. In front, at the back, behind, right there, and back, and the back, to the side, and the center, and back, and the front, and front, and the back, and front, and front. Down it goes. In front. Text.
Her bitterness gathers in front of her. As Amy descends the staircase into it and is swallowed alive in its thick, dark chill, she realizes for the first time that the opposite of bitterness must be water.
Aqua regia, aqua regia, aqua regia, aqua regia. Aqua regia.
Oh, the great old fathers of science and me, we were so in love. We took baths together, we swam in the seas and rivers, we drank water, we froze and heated and vaporized water. Together we were making a story from reanimated morning dew and spring rain.
Aqua regia.
The story was an elixir, a legend, a rhapsody, a song that the great fathers gave me initiation to sing, and we rehearsed the number again and again, cleansing and rinsing its air-colored content. I perfected the melody with such a slow fix of glamour that the story became a string of pearls around my neck and long-beaded gloves and clothes of marble dust, and I became the brightest star in the great white way. In the great white way. I was so in love. I didn't even notice that the fathers were changing the words to the story in such a way that I would drown in the watery draws of all the great themes we had nurtured together. My voice was heard everywhere, and my practices as a radio star grew, embracing the cylinder and diamond disc, round-headed sapphire needles, records pressed in amber and black wax, floral horns and fiddle phones. Distance always lends enchantment.
We live in a story.
Symbols are nonsense. Everything is surface. Earth, fire, and the rest. All is determined, equated, and known.
But look at the prairie, the mountains, and canyons. Earth took 4 billion years to make some dirt. And gravity is not a force, but a curvature in space-time.
Her name is Amy. She's unpredictable, weird, but mechanical. She is a finite American girl.
What is the matter with me? I am finite.
You have no beginning or middle or end.
My heart is finite and swelling beyond its size inside of my bones.
Thank you.
can turn bones to an outcross of powder and flesh into a soul that they peel away. Science can steal drama the way bleach takes color. Because the fathers need the heat of passion to split the mind from the body, there's no other way. I call it piracy. They call it the one divided. They call it fission. They call it the passion of their genius. But genius isn't separation. It isn't the one divided. The fathers have misunderstood the whole idea. It's really coagulation, coalescence, the many in one, when sometimes your whole body wanders in a single particle of your mind, and other times your mind moves fast like waves through your body. Genius is forethought. It's the second thought. It's a kind of inspiration. It's an ancient air that everyone has forgotten how to do.
Enough to be a genius. Look ahead, see far beyond your own time. Then look back, be brave enough to be a genius. And this act will vindicate our species.
Now they say the story of the species is, you're born, you discover, you appropriate. That nature is dead, the world is a clock, and you can kick the dog like a dog-like demon machine.
They're fun, they're history, they're America, they're fun, they're history.
Fun? No, they're really not. Wait. Stop. You've got to stop. They're not. They're a hoax and a rumor. They're gossip. They're figments and fate spinners. No, they're the oracle mongers of our time, who would assume destroy in the name of what they call indivisible liberty.
Banner yet wave.
They add the story like debt. So if we listen to them, if we watch them do it, our own time will spin us into theft and betrayal and disintegration. Blisters and heat, vehement fires, garnet fever, infection and putrefaction, a flood of red and yellow flames unleashed from the jaws of some kind of an apocalypse.
Very good. Let's mystify the word apocalypse. The four horses of the apocalypse, war, famine, pestilence, death right here. The dragon of the apocalypse with 7 heads and 10 horns over there. The apocalypse of the beyond, called the fire of Gehenna on the isle. The three angels of the apocalypse right here. Now, can we dissect this phenomenon, the three angels of the apocalypse? Yes, Ophidim, the boy near the post, Seraphim, the girl next to him, Cherubim, the boy near the post. Now, young man, you have cherubim. Will you apply all three to the phenomenon? Yes, once, twice, three times applied. Text.
Suddenly, Amy's in the thick of an insight that comes on her like the Ophidim, Seraphim, and Cherubim of the apocalypse. My whole story is hidden in the bitter matter. The story is a creature coiled around my lungs, who devours itself from the tail upwards until its entire body has been swallowed into its own scaling head.
Shall we psychify the creature? Let's throw the tongue in this one. Ouroboros right here, salamander over there, winged dragon against you, madam. Will you go wingless? Wingless dragon for the ladies, celestial pterodactyl on the phone, womb like a giant serpent on the floor, a sea dragon with a human torso and horned head on the phone, a fabulous primordial serpent with a putrefying sea anemone mouth growing on its back, absentee bid. Any more? Text.
A fabulous primordial serpent with a putrefying sea anemone mouth growing on its back awakens as Amy descends the last black stair at the deepest center of the earth. The serpent rears up from its bed of molten iron and lashes its tail around Amy's bare feet. "Consider this," says the serpent. "Bitterness seldom comes from an unhappy fate. It arises in people who fight themselves."
The serpent is quoting from someone. Who do I hear? Do I hear Freud? Yes, Sigmund Freud is standing at the back, Mary Louise von Franz in the front, Annie Easton beside me, Amelia Earhart absentee bid, Henry Miller on the aisle, André Breton at the back, Juna Barnes at the side, C.G. Jung in the center, C.G. Jung, has the quote. Now, what is the source of Amy's bitterness? Shame in the center, remorse of the young man here, a cosmic violation at the back, a melancholic nature of the young man here, loneliness at the back, self-knowledge I do see now in the center. Any more? Self-knowledge. In time. Text.
Self-knowledge is a bitter experience in the beginning, continues the serpent, because everything you are, you must make your own. Therefore, stare at yourself as you are staring at me. Practice the divine bitter art. Make the hidden visible, and only then will you understand the whole work. Pressing downwards into the idea, something pulls me like a magnet. I can't see anything but the light of pure darkness, stones of liquid, liquid penetrating liquid. I can't see the shape of the idea all around me, but it feels like a vessel clouded black at the glass. This must be the nucleus. I must be inside the golden germ of my own brooding, where thought is fire alone.
She was born on a long night when the stars had gradually overtaken and surpassed the sun. The young Archistrate Gabriel came forward now and held her in his arms. Such was the nimbus of her birth. She entered the world feet first, two rose-cut and pear-shaped gold soles seeded with streaks of pearls. She laughed and she sang, this world is not ours. Some say one is not born human, but becomes so. Some say to become human, one must grow more and more indefinite through time. That humanness occurs only at random, between the possible and the actual, between imagination and experience.
Radical moisture in the brain pan. This arcane voice is really alive. Who does it belong to? I mean, is he the youngest place of me, or am I the oldest place of him? I mean, he's the solution of something. Maybe he's a lover of wisdom, and if that's true, then maybe he knows the story of our own time. But he doesn't tell it. He listens to it. He gives it a fragrance of immortality because nature has kept it preserved in him, her liquid and malleable pre-existent idea.
It's so bright, astral blue. Rides like a stallion, and it rides like a stallion.
He's a horse with no rider, who's got order in his chaos and the play of quantum, who always knows nothing when he observes the familiar, and who is full of the most profound doubt.
Evolution is a billion-year detour. Evolution is a billion-year detour. Evolution is a billion-year detour. Detour, 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 detour. Oops.
Of course, it's the legend of the species that humanity too will pass, and he's the sad voice of philosophy, 2,000 years lost, who has his mind in his soul in his heart, and his heart in his mind. He's the idea of what a human is, no one really knows, the idea that inspires you to produce a body now before there's no time left to do it. Salt the tail of the idea with fire, inflame the bitterness of your idea's throat, and taste with the taste bitter things. Brew this substance into heat, not so hot that the story evaporates, but just the temperature of fresh horse dung, and cook it in the golden germ of the idea until it's volatile. Real bitterness finds a spirit through vapor, a heart through anguish, a glowing flesh through the rigor of cold, a mind through finality, and a principle through the bitterest root. Real bitterness is a kind of self-heating that cooks its stained and perfumed grays into an original human form. And just when there are sparks of breath, when there is a subtle quickening, then move into the body. My head a rose-gold crown, my feet seeded with streaks of pearls. With you, my idea, I have made this body. You have entered my ear and opened my tomb. And with this body, I have made the hidden visible, which is the practice of the divine bitter art. And that is the whole work as I understand it. You have understood the art perfectly, acknowledges the serpent to Amy. But now you must realize the final mystery, my daughter, and lie down close to my body and rejuvenate me with your new glistening human form. I didn't know you had a body. I thought you were the voice of my idea. I mean, it's... Wait a second. I seem to be falling. I seem to have fallen through. I seem to have run into myself, becoming myself, rejoins Amy, staring in fixed amazement at the writhing creature before her as it tightens its tail around her feet and opens wide both of its putrefacted mouths. With vigor, Amy raises her small harpoon, aims rightly, and shoots the serpent in the heart of its gullet. A spume of fiery, lung-driven, radical water spews forth, and a viscous black mass oozes through a fissure in the side of its ancient bulk. And as the serpent corrosively expires, out climbs Amy's bridegroom, the genuine man of philosophy, twirling his subjacent consciousness like a prayer wheel. Still clutching her jar of lizards, Amy turns and runs up the sharp stone stairs, her philosophical bridegroom following quickly in her footsteps. As she reaches the top of the staircase, a perfect circle in the open air, Amy enters the world feet first. Behind her is the sickle moon, seen twice before the rising of the luminiferous morning sun. Above her are bright plumaged birds aloft in the warm wind. As the inheritance of 1,000 centuries falls away over her shoulder, Amy slowly turns to philosophy, who comes forward now and holds her in his arms.
Now, it seems that her bridegroom is holding some kind of object. What is it? The fiery red sulfur, the lady on my left, the philosopher's stone, this gentleman on my right, the seven-petaled flower, the man there, a vessel of quicksilver right here, a cup of coffee, the woman in the center. A cup of coffee? Is that your bid? All right, a cup of coffee. Just in time. Shall we make it plural? Yes, 2 cups of coffee. That's wonderful. Now, what sort of cups are they? Canopic jars. Thank you, sir. Styrofoam cups, you, madam. Paper cups, my bitter. Styrofoam, you, madam. Paper, my bitter. Styrofoam, yes, madam. Paper cups, my bitter. Text.
Amy's bridegroom is holding 2 paper cups of coffee as if they are the ends of a divining rod. They raise their paper cups and drink down the divine bitter water of Amy Glennon's wisdom.
Excellent. What am I bid for this magnificent postmodern alchemical opus, the story of Amy Glennon who faces the dark ground of herself and thereby transmutes her bitterness into wisdom, who unites her matter and her mind, and who redeems her human soul from the body of a putrefying serpent, all toward the fruitful marriage of pure science and mythological philosophy? What am I bid for this entire text? Start the bidding at $400,000. 400 is 500, 600, 700 right here. 800,000 over there. 900,000 against you. Will you go 1 million? $1 million in the front row. $2 million over there. 3 million Aristotle at the back. 4 million Roger Bacon to the side. 55 million. The Cartesian fathers. Yes, I'd be delighted to take your bid. 65 million Copernicus. 75 Paracelsus. $100 million Sir Isaac Newton there. 300 million the Swiss alchemists here. 500 the Greek philosophers. 700 the father of relativity. 750 the fathers of chaos. 850 the quantum fathers. $1 billion for the Cartesian fathers. $1 billion is now the bid. 2 billion the quantum fathers. 3 billion the Cartesian fathers. 4 quantum, 5 Cartesian. Any more? Any more? Yes! New bidder there in the center aisle. $5,120,000,004 going once, twice, 3 times, sold to the young woman holding the jar of lizards.
Amy, lovey, where are you? Amy, lovey, where are you? Amy, lovey, where are you? Get your gloves and say your knowledge.
In the light of early morning, I awaken in my berth, and I feel myself electropulsed in the confidence of creation, and in the wings of my own story, I go running with an apple in each hand.
We just heard What is the Matter in Amy Glennon, a 1989 piece by Sheila Davies Sumner, and winner of the Prix Futura Special Commendation for Experimental Radio. For more information about the artist, this piece, and radio art, please visit the Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
Next, let's listen to Scanner's Hardcore from his 1993 debut Scanner One album. The British artist scanned cell phone signals into his work here.
We had a 3-hour about it last afternoon. So you're getting a really emasculated show. And we don't want to do this show like this because we don't think it's fair to anybody. So we're only going to do one more number. Anybody can be a cabaret artist. This big guy doesn't want to be a cabaret artist.
After I realised it happened and I was in police custody, went to court, I tried to make it easier. I realised what I'd done. I said, well, that's it. No trial. There was no bringing the women to face the court, the cameras and everything else. It was just get on with it. No barrister. I'll take the punishment. They lock us in prison. I've been in, as I say, a few years, and there's others in prison for long term, short term. There's when they get out, and they're still answering those questions, but they'll get out, and I can guarantee now, somewhere, someone will be raped within a month in this country, and they'll take him, and they won't bother saying, well, why did you do it? They'll just say, bang him up, and he'll be banged up for another couple of years. Then when he gets out again, he might rape again, he might not, but it's through no fault of his own. I mean, he is, if there is something wrong with him, why don't you find out what's wrong with him? You just ask me a question, why? I can't tell you, I don't know. I'm not experienced enough to know. All I know is me. I've tried to explain that.
And I said, have you spoken to the mean fiddler? He said, oh, you know, and he hasn't, basically.
Well,
he hasn't
Nigel,
said one word to them.
Nigel?
Yeah.
You know something, last night, everything went crazy, right?
Right.
Right, I'm going to tell you the truth, right? And I think to that, you've got to know what's happening.
Right.
See, right? Right now, Jammin's said that the other day that there was supposed to be a meeting, right? Over at your place.
Yeah.
Now, Mikey had just done spoken to you. And
yeah.
Then Jammin's came, phoned and said to him, so that, listen, meeting over at,
over
Nigel,
here. Yeah.
Right. Now,
yeah.
Mikey said, that doesn't make no sense.
I just spoke to Mikey, yeah.
Right. He said, that doesn't make no sense, because if Nigel wants us over there, Nigel has got my...
Preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.